Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Argyle hits theaters and director Matthew Vaughn joins the show.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 296 of Real Blend, a podcast whose favorite Argyle will always be the limousine driver from Die Hard. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend. And on this week's show, Argyle is bringing its unique brand of spy warfare to theaters and eventually to streaming. And because of that, director Matthew Vaughn is our guest on the show. He's going to discuss his new film, his career. He's going to talk about Henry Cavill as Bond. What? And he's going to talk a lot about the X-Men movie as well, too, which was great. Some terrific stories from Matthew Vaughn's career. So we're going to get into that in a heartbeat. But first, let me introduce the boys, starting with Kev McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Kev, how are you, sir?
Sean, Jacob, Gabriel, and honored to be on with you guys today. And I'm very excited for people to hear this Matthew Vaughn interview, because we all walked into this interview. We weren't sure what was going to happen, and we had our own Joaquin Phoenix moment walking out. So it was I can't remember if it was Jake or Sean, but back when we did Joaquin Phoenix for the first time, when he left the room to do, after the interview was over, he's like, "Dare I say I had?" And he turns around to us and go, "Fun?" Like, he was confused. He had a good time on our show. And then I think when we left the Matthew Vaughn interview, we had the exact same reaction, because we were nervous, because, you know, we had never sat down with him long form. And I remember we were all like, is that
well
fun?
And to start the Argyle press day, Kevin got Matthew Vaughn really early in the day.
Yeah.
And Vaughn made it very clear that he does not enjoy doing interviews.
Yeah.
So we were all like, oh, great. Not unlike watching Saturday Night Live this past weekend with Dakota Johnson as the host. Ahead of the Madam Web junket, which hasn't happened yet. And she says, essentially, boy, I hate doing junket interviews. They're the absolute worst.
And to give some clarity to Vaughn's comments, we were just talking about like jobs and kind of doing what you love for a living. And he's like, I love being on set and filmmaking. No disrespect to you. I just don't love this process. Like, the interview process, essentially, is what he was kind of saying. But so when we had him on our show, which you're about to hear, this was like surprisingly awesome.
But sometimes I wonder, because, you know, obviously he said that, and then we had a great experience with him, and Alexander Payne said something similar before. We try not to take that too personally, but like, less of I hate doing interviews and I hate talking to you guys, and more that they hate being forced to sum up their entire cinematic filmmaking process into these 4-minute soundbite thing. Like, it seems like the impression I get is not that they don't love talking about this thing that they've spent months and sometimes years of their life doing, but they hate having to do it as these like rapid fire 4-minute sort of conversations. Yes, Gabe.
I don't know if I've never asked you guys this. How did they land on 4 minutes? Does anyone know like when they land on that slot?
Well, it used to be much more. You know, I subscribe to a couple of YouTube channels of people that did junkets long before any of us did. Bobby Wygand's a really popular one, if you get the chance. She was a junketeer out of Dallas.
And Jim Ferguson.
Friend of ours, Jim Ferguson. I mean, there are enough people that on the junket circuit now that were doing it at a time when, I mean, you hear some of the stories about, and we've all been doing it enough where it's changed just in the time that we've done it, but they tell stories about what used to be 30-minute junket slots, 30-minute TV junket slots. They tell stories about before a junket interview that they would come in with a camera and take a picture of the two of you together and have the picture ready to go when the interview is over. You hear these sort of stories, and it just makes me wonder, like, what sort of stuff. Well, I guess, you know, we're getting off topic, but the biggest change, the biggest transition in the junket world since we started is that when we all started, all junkets were in person.
Yeah, and on beta tapes.
And like, on beta, the format that, yeah, my God, you used to, when you used to do a Twilight junket, which would be about 84 different rooms, and oftentimes three cameras per room, I used to actually have to bring, and that's not to say that there weren't other junkets that weekend, legit, you used to have to bring an extra empty suitcase to pack full of beta tapes.
Well, you'd get a junket gift bag usually too, to really pull back the curtain, crap, you know, like, I'm not talking like a luxurious grift. I'm talking about like, you know, a t-shirt and a hat and all sorts of paraphernalia that you'd end up being like, I can't even fit any of this.
I used to I used to give 99.9% of that stuff away to the employees of the Four Seasons, which I'm sure they were like, what the hell am I going to do? What am I going to do with a Terminator Genesis t-shirt?
Yeah, I work at the Four Seasons, sir.
And just taking over Sean's job for a second, I'm going to introduce Jake Hamilton, who's speaking right now from Fox 32 in Chicago.
Thank you. Kevin and I have dressed up like the pills that Sean has to choose from to whether or not he wants to go to the Matrix.
So let's really pull the curtain back here. We have a new recording time slot. And if you're watching on the YouTube channel, which is a great transition, you're going to notice from here on out that for the most part, the boys are going to be TV ready, and this sloth is still going to be rolling up to his desk.
here's some behind the scenes. That is Sean TV ready.
Yeah.
You know, Sean, don't you still have a tuxedo from like the Ben-Hur premiere that you could like just throw on for us?
Somewhere, yes. I'll dust it off.
The Wizard of Oz premiere? Yeah.
What about, bring a leisure suit maybe, you know, a little more recent.
Start getting those t-shirt tuxedos, t-shirts. I'll just wear those on show day. So now you have a reason to go to the YouTube channel. And while you're there, make sure you hit subscribe and turn on your notifications. Ding. We are adding followers all the time. Great comments on last week's show and everybody sort of weighing in with their Oscar feedback. That was a really interesting show, and it generated a ton of really good responses from folks. So please make sure you're going in and weighing in on all of that. Of course, if you just want to listen to us in an audio format, we're available all different places you get your audio needs met. If you would like to sign up for Real Blend Premium, you get a couple different things that come with the Real Blend Premium service, including a newsletter and an ad-free version of the show. So if you'd like to find out how to join Real Blend Premium, head to the description wherever you are currently listening to the most recent show. All right, so Matthew Vaughn. Most people primarily know him from the Kingsman films. He also, as you will find out in this conversation, directed a film that gets a ton of credit for getting Daniel Craig the role of 007 called Layer Cake. If you have never seen Layer Cake, please go out of your way to go see that. I had no clue. Something really interesting about Layer Cake that Matthew was going to tell you guys in the interview leading into this. And then as a little standout, he also directed X-Men First Class and goes into great detail about how and why directing a superhero film or a franchise film in general is not necessarily something he would like to do again. And, you know, what was interesting, too, is because he was going to get to do Days of Future Past. And he kind of tells us why he didn't do Days of Future Past as a follow up to First Class. And he just ended up being a terrific, terrific, insightful interview
from
a guy who, after a couple of minutes realized, oh, I can open up about my career and really get into in-depth conversations, which, as we all know, is like a badge of honor for this show. So let's stop talking about Matthew Vaughn and get right to the conversation. Without further ado, this is Matthew Vaughn joining the Real Blend podcast. Wow. So we had to wing it and we're still here.
Well, so I'll open this up. 20 years ago, you directed one of my favorite films, Layer Cake.
Are we on camera?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're going. Yeah, we're going. Okay, okay. But 20 years ago, you directed one of my favorite movies, Layer Cake, which is...
How long ago?
20 years ago.
Okay.
It was 2004, right? Am I had that right? Yeah. And so 20 years between that point and here, to be sitting with you here in London for Argyle, I'm just curious how reflective you are over those 20 years, what you maybe remember on Layer Cake that you're still utilizing now in a film of this scale.
I, as you can see, I'm actually shocked it's been 20 years. When you said that, I was like, oh my my God. So,
like you thought it had been less or more?
Less.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Trust me, the older you get, the more in denial you are about time. Yeah. The clock starts going the wrong way. It sounds crazy, is I'm only now beginning to think I'm a film director. So, you know, when I did Layer Cake, I never looked through a movie camera before. It was a Guy Ritchie was meant to direct Layer Cake.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was all developed for him. I was a producer, right? And when he decided not to do it, my wife, to her, you know, I mean, really, really, to her credit, it was her idea, not mine. She said, I think you should direct it, because she'd seen how much I've been working on the script and how I worked so closely with Guy on Lock, Stock and Snatch. And I was like, I can't become a director, become a producer. And the moment I try directing, and if it doesn't go well, I'm screwed as a producer, because why would any director, they'd say, what do you know? You made the world's worst movie. Shut up. So I lost the high ground. And I was umming and ahhing about it. And then J.J. Connolly, the writer of the book and the screenplay, Layer Cake, he said it as well. Somebody said, you should, cause I went to him saying, who do you think we should go to next? And he goes, you. And I went on holiday and I went, okay, let's do it. I had no aspirations to be a film director. It didn't even occur to me that I could be one or should be one. Over the last 20 years, what's changed is I would say on set, I was 70% a producer, 30% a director. So, you know, it's Jekyll and Hyde, but I would make decisions. You know, let's say I needed another setup, and I'll be looking at my watch. The producer would say, no, you don't. I go, right, we can live without it. Now it has flipped. I'm now making decisions based purely on creativity and I think the term imposter syndrome really does apply to me when it comes to being a director. I'm sort of like, am I getting away with this again? And it's something because I never aspired to be it. It's sort of like, how did this happen and how long will this last? And I'm grateful for it and I absolutely love it. Yeah. So, but I keep thinking I'm going to get found out that it's I have to work hard to direct. It doesn't come easy.
If you don't mind, then what pushes you into each next project then?
It's great. Why wouldn't I? I mean, no, the fact that I can, I'm always expecting that one day the phone will stop ringing or no one will take me seriously as a director.
Okay.
But now I'm, when you said it's 20 years, I don't know why it just, that landed something in my mind. And also I was being interviewed yesterday and in the introduction, they went through all the movies. And I'm like, oh my God, I've made quite a few films now.
It's some great films, man. Like Kick Ass. I mean, wow. Stardust. We all love Stardust.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking love Stardust.
So I think what I've learned is I'm now beginning to feel like I am a film director. If people say, what do you do? I say, I make movies, because I feel like I do, you know, the producing and the financing and writing. I feel like I make, I don't like saying I'm a director. I feel a bit weird saying it.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to go through some of the big stars that you've worked with in your career. Yeah. Because
quite a long list now.
I mean, it's incredible. Yeah.
This movie alone.
Fucking Peter O'Toole. De Niro. Legend. Robert De Niro. I don't want to call him De Niro.
You can call him De Niro. At least you know who he is.
Bob. Ian McKellen. Yeah, Bob, Nicolas Cage. Michael Caine. Colin Firth. Mark Hamill. Julianne Moore. Michael Gambon. Elton John.
Oh,
I'm sort of curious, who was the person that you worked with on set that you most paused, looked at in the flesh and went, what the fuck are you doing?
I can tell you, it was Mark Hamill straight away.
Really? Why?
I mean, not why, but it's Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
End of. Right. And I looked through. I remember looking through the lens, going, Luke Skywalker. I'm directing Luke Skywalker, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. So I was most, and then I think the second time I got a real chill was with Michael Caine, because we were setting up the shot and I heard someone, what I thought, doing a bad Michael Caine impression. And I went, guys, come on. He's got to, oh, hey, Michael. and that was pretty phenomenal. So those are the, I'd say.
Do you know his real last name is Maurice Micklewhite?
Maurice Micklewhite. Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
Micklethwaite, isn't it?
Micklethwaite. Is it because he was apparently, like, he was trying to
secure a name for acting.
Equity.
And he was watching. Yeah. He looked up at the one of the Marquee. Theaters marquees, and yeah. It said the Kane Mutiny.
Yeah,
and that's how he chose his last name.
That's really
yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, when we worked with Michael, I just never wanted to say action because he would just tell us stories between each take, and his stories were. And all the movies I loved, and he would tell us what happened and how he did it. And his enthusiasm still to be on a movie set at that age was very impressive.
I want to ask you about something that gets discussed in this film where it's a criticism leveled at Bryce, and it's a narrative reason, but I think it applies to a lot of your films where they say it's a cliffhanger and they're like, no, that's a cop out. But you like to end on cliffhangers and you like to tease out. So I thought you might have had some thoughts as to that criticism, kind of level the things that end on a cliffhanger and don't sort of deliver.
Tell me what I can think of. Lockstock. What else?
It feels like the Kingsman movies kind of end on a tease for things to come.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Not by design. Maybe by default.
Like this movie led me wanting more.
Well, yeah, once we finally talk spoilers.
Oh no, I like teases. Yeah, for what's coming next. Yes.
Yeah.
The cliffhanger's got. When you say cliffhanger, I think the Italian Job. That's a cliffhanger. Meaning, yeah. Are you fucking with me? that is a cliffhanger. If I'm going to do a cliffhanger, I want everyone to fucking kick the TV across. You know, go. I can't believe this. And go. Yeah, teasing. Jesus. I like to tease, but I wouldn't. Yeah, so that's for me. That's maybe just an American English.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Bring it back to Luke Skywalker for a second. Yeah. I think I told you this earlier.
I never thought anyone would say that during this podcast.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But one of my favorite edits that you have in this film is the blinking of the eye.
Yeah.
And I last night as I'm watching the film, I haven't felt that way about an edit like that probably since the wipe in Star Wars.
Wow.
Because it became such a character almost in the film.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I know you don't love to dive into exactly how you do things sometimes with filmmaking, but I'm genuinely curious, is that done in camera? Are you able to
No, that's not. I mean, it's very simple.
Is it just a digital edit?
No, it's basically a white with eyelashes, right? And quicker and coming down. And
but it has like a scope to it and like an oval.
But it wasn't that complicated to do, but I got worried because when I said we're going to use blinking as a device for, first of all, for the fights, because, and by the way, shooting action sequences twice, you got to be a moron to come up with the idea, because it does happen sometimes. My brain, like the ice skating as well, I was like, I shouldn't have thought of this, because now I have to execute on really hard work. But the blinking, I just thought it was a really fun way to transition between the fights, but then I thought actually this would be a great way do time jumps as well. So and if you notice, there's two types of, there's blinking with energy, and then there's the shutting down,
right.
Blinking, and then it will come up and we're in a new place. So it was, and by the way, Star Wars, when I fell in love with cinema, right? And I was a kid, and I don't know who it was. Well, someone was interviewing us and Sam Jackson, and I said, I was six when I saw it, and he like nearly fell off his chair. Like, what are you talking about? But I saw Star Wars, I literally thought Darth Vader was in the small, not Star Cruise or whatever, I don't know what, Princess Leia's little spaceship, and he was like a pirate invading the princesses. Cause I thought it was the princess has to be in the big one. But that's how young I was. But I remember then thinking these wipes were astonishing. So it stayed with me. I just thought a wipe made you just, it was telling me, it was like a turning of the page. Mm. So we did try, actually, there were two ways I was thinking. Do I do the blinks or do I do like a turning of the page?
Like a book, her book.
A book sort of in the movie that we looked at it and it looked cool, but it was a device instead of a narrative reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, the blink, because we're in her perspective.
Yes.
That's what's so brilliant about it. And exactly. It makes perfect sense that she would be going
And the whole movie's
that.
About being in her head, literally. So there you go.
But by the time we get to this process, we try to avoid asking you any questions that we know you've been asked a thousand times. But I do want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question about a question that I feel like you're getting a lot, which is Taylor Swift.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yes. I don't super get it. I don't really get it either. I think there's an Argyle connection in there somewhere. I think she wrote something Argyle related. But I guess my question for you is, to what degree do you go, stop fucking asking me about Taylor Swift? And to what degree do you go, hey, like people are talking about it. I've seen that headline everywhere.
well, be careful what you wish for sometimes. And, you know, the enthusiasm that Taylor Swift has or her fans have for her, I don't want to take advantage of. And sure. I definitely don't want to alienate them, because if they all turn around, like, God forbid, imagine Taylor goes, you shouldn't watch this film. Yeah. You're like, oh my God.
Go watch Cats instead.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I'm not, and, but it was a real, the lesson for me, it was the first time I had my daughter come to me and say, you never told me Taylor Swift wrote the book. I was like, what are you talking? I literally was like, what are you talking about? She goes, Taylor Swift wrote the book. And when am I going to meet her? And I was like, she didn't write the book, and you're not going to meet her.
And I was just, you want to meet Mark Hamill?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, come on, explain this to me. And then she got on and was showing me all this stuff. And this I think it started with a lady on TikTok, and her analysis was unbelievably thorough. All right. So, I mean, so thorough. I was like,
yeah, wow. She did write the book.
You know, but I was like, did Ellie Conway base it on her? It got to this weird, I was even like, there's something maybe I don't know. But she didn't. That's why I went, I have to kill this one off. Because look, Taylor Swift's an amazing lady that has been taken advantage of by, and, you know, yes. Look what happened to Scooter Braun.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be on that list.
Good man.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your action and the differences of your action when you are inside the sequences that are very clearly the book. And the ones that are rooted in real life, and how eventually they start to come really close to each other. I don't know what you clearly realize this, but your movie has like back to back to back big set pieces to end.
Oh, wait, this was my small little lockdown movie.
That's hilarious.
What makes me laugh is because when my daughter said, you know, I showed her Romancing in the Stone, they said, please make us a movie like this. And I was like, okay. I'll try. I said, I don't know if I can pull this one off because I'm going into a bit of a comfort zone denial of, you know, there's stuff in this that's not my normal DNA of filmmaking. I prefer R-rated movies. I just always have.
Yeah.
That's me. Mm-hmm. And I went, you know what? Look, we're coming out of lockdown. This is really contained. It's small. It's intimate. I can just do this one first. And then I've got another movie massive compared to, well, I think it was massive compared to this, but maybe this ballooned. But then what happens is my mind gets in. There wasn't that much action in the script. There wasn't many set pieces. There was no cat. There was no there was so many things that once I got under the hood, I got inspired, and then I can't help myself, just push the boundaries. So, but this is meant to be my small little.
And the one in particular I want to ask about is Henry driving that car down the mountain.
When he skateboards down the
on the moke, the mini moke. No, the moke.
Is it freeing to just say, like, physics don't matter in this instance because we're inside the imagination of the storyteller?
That was the whole point. The whole first 4.5-5 minutes of the movie, I sort of wanted a lot of people to think, Vaughn has lost his fucking mind. What is he doing? Whirly bird and this, and then scene is picking up. I just really want everyone going, oh, you're in. I just wanted them to go, oh, God. And then we find out, nah, it's not the case. And it's sort of the same with Romancing the Stone. When I was watching it with the kids, I'd forgotten the beginning. And, you know, it's the Western and the hero. And I was like, oh, Zemeckis. Romancing the Stone was my first successful date, right? Okay. So you have to understand, that movie was really important to me. So, it was a really... Here in London, the Odeon Kensington High Street, no longer there. And I went there because I bought tickets for this girl, and purely the Romancing the Stone, I went, oh, I don't know, some rom-com chick flick. I'm going to hate every second of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked it more than her. Yeah. I was just like, this is amazing. And I said, was it Little Nelly? Well, you know, the pickup truck wasn't the... And I was like, this is... I remember thinking Michael Douglas was the coolest guy. DeVito was funny. Kathleen Turner. I mean, I was just like, this is movie making. But it gave me something to just... And we came out and, you know, dates, 13, it's not easy, you know, it was awkward. We actually had something to discuss. I was like, oh, wait, because we both enjoyed it for different reasons. And I thought, I'd love to recreate. I genuinely think this is the perfect date movie. You know, on Valentine's Day, I hope the world watches my Valentine in Sam Jackson is in the movie.
Yes.
I was trying to make a movie where I think women will love and men will tolerate. That's what I was trying to come up with.
That's great.
I'm going to shift gears completely because I want to geek out with you about
probably my favorite scene in the entire X-Men franchise, which is the Blood and Honor sequence, which I with Michael Fassbender.
Oh, the first scene we shot.
Which one do you want to shed first, Blood or Honor? Like, yeah. I think that might be the most badass Magneto scene I've ever seen. Just the whole sequence is brilliant. I know we're completely shifting gears here, yeah. but I just wanted to nerd out with you about that scene and filming that. Did you know how badass that was going to be reading it? Because
well, I'll let you into a secret on that scene. It was the first day of filming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, we arrive, you know, I'm nervous because, you know, I'm a director for hire, which is a whole new ball game for me. And
director for hire? Oh, can you explain that to our audience? Like, because at this point you've directed movies prior to that.
Yeah, done, but I've always been independent and I still am. You know, this is independent, Kingsman's independent. They're all independent movies, but that was the one time where, and when you're being a director for hire, the biggest thing I learned from it is I've been, so we say, slightly dismissive of some other directors and their movies. And then I realized how wrong I was, because when you're a director for hire on these big studio films, you have one little bit of a hand on that steering wheel. Mm-hmm. And there's another 12 hands with big muscles that just shifted around. And it's an interesting thing because they make you do bad things. And then they blame you for it. if you do some good stuff, then they go, well, that was us. So it's when you direct these movies, you're more like, it's a really odd experience. It was for me. I mean, it's so much so I never went back because I was like, not doing that. Because it was really, I know actually the most disappointing thing for me with the X-Men world was when I am, and we got Days of Future Past ready. And then I wasn't allowed to direct it because Brian had contractually first option. And I was like, oh, okay. And I get it, because, you know, X-Men, Bryan Singer, I don't care what anyone says. He's, sure. And he started it in a time when superheroes were not in and I remember seeing the first X-Men, and I thought X2 was a must.
The X2 opening in the White House is classic.
Amazing. Yeah. So back to that scene, Blood and Honor. Was it Blood and Honor?
I hope I had that right. I'd be really mad if I'm wrong on that.
So it was the first day of filming, and one of the guys I worked with, Carlos, I put him behind the bar. There's the Argentinian barman, right? And we're shooting the first scene. And I said, look, what's going to happen? He's not an actor, obviously. He works with me. And he's pulling the pint and handing it over and then walks over and he's, you know, gets the knife in his hand. I kept going, ooh, like this. I'm like, dude, this is a knife. It's flying through the air. It goes into you. Make it, He's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And Fassbender's thinking this is like an actor. It's no, I know him. I went, I'll tell you what I do. Ready? 3, 2, and I just fucking punched him. As hard as I could. He's an old friend. I winded him. He went, down. And I was like, that is what I mean. And the whole crew, all the actors were just like, okay. And then I said, ready? Let's go. And that's where I think the tension came from, because they were just like, Jesus, this guy's going to punch me if I get it wrong. And he's a big guy as well. I think if they think if I'll punch him, I'll punch anyone.
Dude, that scene is so badass. Like, which one do you want to shed first? Oh, yeah. My God. Really, and Fassbender's,
he's so good.
Yeah.
His James Bond audition, if you ask me.
That perfectly leads to my next question, because a lot of people credit Layer Cake with being a big reason that Daniel Craig was cast as James Bond. And he was fantastic.
Rightfully so.
But around that time, Henry Cavill obviously famously also auditioned for the part.
I've seen him and Daniel.
And I feel like this movie, and also a little bit Man from U.N.C.L.E., give us a little bit of taste of maybe...
Great in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
He was brilliant.
But I think Man from U.N.C.L.E. is one of the most underrated movies, by the way.
Incredible.
It might be Guy Ritchie's best movie.
Yeah, I when I saw Man from U.N.C.L.E., and Guy and I are very competitive. Let's put it that way. But we were competitive before I became a director. We want to beat each other, whether it's chess or whatever. And when I saw Man from U.N.C.L.E., I thought he knocked it out of the park. Still do not understand why. It should have done better.
I went to that set, and it was the only time I ever felt sitting across from two actors where I was like, fuck you, you're not human.
Oh, yeah, the two of them.
Cavill and Armie Hammer. And I was like, you're not human. I'm looking at gods.
Well, the weird thing is we were shooting Kingsman, I think, next door. Because Guy used to come visit me on the set.
Okay.
Yeah, it was weird. We were like... playing chess, going, we're meant to be making movies. But it's a great film.
My question was going to be, how do you think Henry Cavill would have done as Bond? Do you feel like you got a taste
I think if you're an Ian Fleming fan, there is no one better right now on this planet to play James Bond than Henry Cavill.
Do you think he should, if they came back around?
Still do. I don't, if you're an Ian Fleming fan, if you read the book, he is James Bond. Yeah. in every, there's that he's just perfect for it. Full stop.
Yep. You see him walk down the hallway. That's Bond.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to switch into spoilers. So now you can talk freely. And everything we talk about from this point on, we will hold until after people have seen the movie. We don't want to ruin anything.
We got to get you on our show again sometime. Yeah. Man. Oh, you're awesome.
Please. I want to just talk about Henry's final scene. I want to talk about the accent and the hair.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the design of that and what it's meant to mean.
Jesus, he's obsessed with cliffhangers. Huh? I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's a cop-out. No, it's a cliffhanger.
Well, yeah. I also want to talk about Henry's, just his ability to be versatile and do almost anything in this film.
Well, the whole thing about Argyle is about turning everything upside down, inside out, and topsy-turvy. So that is meant to be the ultimate moment of, is everything we just watched real? Mm-hmm. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But in the next movie, you get to see more of that new character.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I hope, by the way, and I say in the next movie and I touch wood. Well, fuck, I'm not touching
wood. Someone find some wood.
Touching wood.
Yes, okay, yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
Kind of a two-parter. One, this is just the fan nerd in me about this. When Ryan Cranston's character is revealed to be a villain, right before that moment, he knocks on the door. Is that at all the man who knocks, Breaking Bad type of reference where he breaks bad? Am I just reading into that as like a fan of that show?
Oh, that reveal. Sorry, I was thinking, well, the first time you meet him, he's got a gun and he shoots someone in the head.
Yeah. That's villainous.
When he's revealed.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's the reveal that he's the father.
The father. Yeah, that's what got me.
Sorry.
No, actually, well, for me, it was the same knock as Valentine. In the first Kingsman.
Oh, that was cool. Okay, all right, cool. Another part of my question is this. The marketing for this film is very heavily focused on the idea of who is Argyle. And what's interesting about that is when that's one of the big reasons why, I mean, not only do I want to see the film because you directed it, but I wanted to know who Argyle was. The marketing worked on me. I am somebody who watched it and was like, I need to find out who that is.
Yeah.
When do you decide in terms of your filmmaking process and or the marketing process, that's going to be the big question that goes into it? Because at the end of the day, you're making a movie in a bubble before we ever see a trailer, before we ever see any marketing about who is Argyle. So like, how does that come about with the studio and the marketing, knowing that's going to be kind of the hook?
Well, I thought one of the things interesting is right now, when you say who is Argyle, it's a legitimate question. When you're seeing Argyle out there, you're going, what is Argyle? Yeah. You know, so it is I thought the Universal were brilliant when they came up with they don't let the cat out of the bag. I was just like, oh man, you guys are clever.
They're very good.
They are good. And then when they said they wanted to put From the Twisted Mind of Matthew Vaughn, and they were really nervous. I mean, yeah, it's great.
You like that?
I thought it was funny. Cool. I didn't care.
Do they have to run that by you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that stuff too.
I don't mind. I'm like, whatever, you know. Although the new one, which only came out yesterday, I wish we'd called the movie A Novel Experience.
You still have time.
I should tell them. Because I was saying in an interview, I mean, this is a really novel experience. I went,
we love a good pun.
Novel experience. Yeah. So maybe I will tell them, actually.
It's cool how you guys did that. Yeah.
I want to talk about the post-credit scene that a lot of people are going to be talking about, which alludes to the fact.
Not as much as the studio hadn't seen it. And they were like, what the fuck is that?
wait, what does that mean?
We shot that just on our own, just for the hell of it.
You snuck it in.
But also, like,
we did that on Layer Cake as
that's,
well. Layer
that's like
cake,
some Denis Villeneuve Dune Part 2 type of stuff.
On the end of Layer Cake, if you want to have a cliffhanger. So,
I love cliffhanger.
Sylvester Stallone, you should have seen him at the Empire Strikes Back.
Good film.
Do you remember when Ace Ventura made fun of that in the sequel? And it opened up with him doing the cliffhanger thing with the raccoon.
But with, I was going to say now. So, on Layer Cake, it was a. The studio, it was originally written, he gets shot, and they went, we'll make this, but he cannot die at the end. I went, fine. You know, and first film was like, whatever, boss. So we shot him getting in the car with Sienna Miller, goes off. That was the cut they saw. And then when we tested it, I went, guys, let's put on the real ending that we shot, and we put NG over every take. Back then, it wasn't digital, so you could get away with blue murder. And I can, if you ever wanted, I wish I could have filmed the executives when they said they jumped out of their skin, like the audience go, huh? You just saw two heads bouncing up and going, and they looked at me and we walked outside and they're like, what the fuck do you think you are? And I'm like, yeah, but I think it's the right ending. He's a drug dealer. There's got to be some moral code. And he was like, no, he's screaming at me. And then you go in for an audience thing where they will start talking about it. And the first guy scribbled goes, what did you think of the ending? Right, first question. And normally you ask, what do you think of the film and all this shit? I was like, wow, he's pissed. And I'm sitting there. And they went, who liked it? 20 hands went up. And he looked at me, he went, boom. And then they said, what do you like about it? And this guy literally said, it felt like an ending that some studio executive wasn't allowed to fuck up. Oh my God. And I looked at him and he looked at me. And to his credit, he went, I'm a studio executive that would have fucked this up. Keep it.
Wow.
Yeah. I respect that. Yeah, I said, thank you.
And then full circle, 20 years later, you did it again.
Yeah, this one, because, yeah, this was a crazy idea because, you know, the book coming out, and you guys should read the book. It's a good book.
They gave it to us.
It's a really good book. It's book one. It's nothing to do with the movie. I mean, well, it is because it's about the young Argyle, sure, Billy Partridge. And it was funny. I just went, so when I read the book, all right, I was like, why are we not filming something from this? You know, and it's all over the stuff. And I had an idea when I was, because, you know, in my mind, what I want to do, on the left of Marv is Kingsman. On the right now is Argyle, right? And they're two different types of spies in films. There's a world where I think a few things can meet in the middle with all of my stuff, like Kick-Ass as well. I've sort of in this, I've just got this sort of new, not new, I've always sort of thought about it, but I just think, you know, for example, I was at Warner's and I was laughing, going, oh, maybe we should do maybe Austin Powers gets his suits made at Kingsman, right? And then I went, nah, fuck it, that's yours. I'm not going to do that. But Argyle, he wears pretty damn well-cut suits, yeah. So there is a universe one day where I can bring everything together.
So you see all of your films connected. Like, you see Kick-Ass in this film.
Yeah, Stardust would be hard push. You never know. I had a sequel to Stardust, which was a really fun idea, but maybe that could work in a weird way, because the idea was that the stone gets thrown over the other way, and lands, and it'd be set in the 60s, and all the wizards and princes come over to England in the 60s, and they fit in because it's the 60s.
Oh my God.
So I thought that could be fun.
We were saying that the next Bond should be in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just shake it up.
That'd be kind of cool.
Do something different.
Yeah. Don't let them do it. I think it's a terrible idea because I want to do that.
We can't have you on our show without bringing up Kick-Ass, because I know we got
you can talk about whatever you want
briefly, mm-hmm. but.
You can give them a little bit more time. They're interesting.
Hey. Oh,
thanks, man. Hey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So correct me if I'm wrong, and watch me botch this nice to get the fuck out of here. You used Adagio in D minor, that yes. Classic score. Is it John Murphy? I'm trying to remember who did that music, but it was so in Adagio Sunshine.
It's my four favorite chords. So if you listen to any piece of my film music, it's the four chords.
Yeah, I felt it in this with Lauren's score too. I wanted to ask you because
music in this is great.
Right, yeah. And will you always use score as a leading character? I wanted to ask you, but that scene in Kick-Ass,
yeah,
like I will never forget seeing that for the first time. We're in the POV of Hit Girl, and so the Adagio in D minor is playing in that moment, and I will never forget hearing the marriage of that music to that scene. And I just wanted to know, like, where your mind was when you filmed it. Did you know you were going to use that music in that point?
Yeah, if I want to create emotion, those four chords. I mean, music is actually quite technical, and it sort of releases dopamines, and I've just figured out which chords does what. So I drive my composers nuts because I'm like, right, I call it the Vaughan chords. I go, right, this scene, Vaughan chords. That one, knock your fucking socks off, Vaughan chords. And I'm adamant about it because I have to instantly make people feel something. And those chords, they're sort of heroic and noble and sad at the same time.
That's exactly what it is. I've never been able to describe it until now.
He's the one.
Thank you for finally making me understand why that makes me feel that way.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why music is a universal language. That's what's crazy about music. Like music and color, we all seem to have the same reaction. Blue is cold, red is warm, D minor is noble and sad, C major is happy, you know.
I cry in that scene. That's one of Cage's best, because he dies in that scene.
Yeah.
That's one of, oh my God.
Cage is a genius. Yeah. By the way, Cage was, a pleasure to work with and a very good actor.
Damn great sequence. Yeah.
They are kicking us out. I wish we had more time. We didn't even get to talk about Bryce Dallas Howard, who is fantastic in your film and carries so much, and John Cena.
We'll do one last question. So if I say to you, this is the last question you can ever ask me, what would it be without mentioning cliffhangers?
What are you, what when are you?
Well, how come you get to say it?
These two. It's his turn.
Oh, and they both literally bowed to the altar. Yeah.
He kind of runs the show.
I'm a little bit the. There is an element. There is an element.
Yeah, we'll remake the movie for you.
A very significant element of a plot point in this movie that is suggested that is it was delivered by a fan. And that they decided to take a fan note and use it going forward.
Now, correct.
Of course, all of your stuff comes from the mind, the twisted mind of Matthew Vaughn. Have you ever heard from a fan an idea that, and you put it in the back of your mind and thought, oh, shit, I'm going to use that at some point?
A fan talked to me about the Days of Future Past comic, which I hadn't read.
Okay.
And then I read that. I went, ooh, this could be a way of doing what I call the Godfather 2 of superheroes in the cutting. So, So that did come from a fan.
Okay, there you go. See?
I swear to God, if we see Matthew Vaughn announced as the next Bond director and it's a 60s period piece.
You'll be dreaming.
I'll be very...
You'll be fast asleep. going, wow.
It'll be Marv plus Real Blend presents.
Yes. Yeah, exactly, exactly. It'll be starring you as Bond.
I mean, yeah. Give the people what they want.
Exactly.
And shout out to your daughter's cat, who's in this movie, by the way. We got to give her a shout out. It's amazing.
Thank you for doing this. We really appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Really
thank you and good luck with it.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
We want to thank our good friend Matthew Vaughn for coming on the show, and of course our friends at Universal for helping us set up this interview as part of the junket. So we're going to get into our review of Argyle now, and we're going to keep it spoiler free for the beginning of it. We are going to reserve a little bit of time to talk spoilers in our review, but we'll make it very clear before we get into that conversation of when that is going to happen, because we want you guys to enjoy the film as it is and protect as much as we can for it. So I'm going to make a comparison to this film and Vaughn's Kingsman franchise, because I think it's the closest in tone in terms of heavy action spies, which seems to be something that Matthew Vaughn is really interested in. It sets it apart from something like Kick-Ass or X-Men First Class. And as much as I think that Argyle is fun, I don't know if it's as fun for me as the Kingsman films, which have this kind of irreverence to them, really kind of pushes the envelope in terms of its humor. I think Taron Egerton is really fun as a leading man. There's something really great about Bryce Dallas Howard, where her character ends up going as the story progresses, and I'll hold on to that. But because of that, because there's a sort of hindrance or hampering in terms of her character being sort of like lost in the mystery of what is Argyle or who is Agent Argyle, and that's been one of the driving forces of the marketing campaign, that I felt is in the dark
as her character did throughout the course of the movie. And there's a lot of, as you heard in the interview, Kevin talked about this sort of blinking perspective that takes you from the real life that's happening to the characters, quote unquote, real life, and the fictional aspect of a story that's being told. I think Vaughn does a good job of sort of balancing that line. But there were times when I was a little bit thrown. It's just like, what is real? What isn't real? And it all gets answered. But through the course of watching it, I will say that that took me out of the picture a little bit, because from the get go, this movie opens with a slam bang action sequence that involves Henry Cavill and John Cena. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a ton of fun. You know, this is going to be off the walls, like really wild, rambunctious. And maybe because Vaughn wanted to do this by design, because he almost talks about in the interview how this was a little bit of a smaller movie for him, the way that he considered it, I thought it dialed back some of the lunacy that he kind of brings to his movies in general. I still had a good time with it. I still enjoyed it, but I didn't love it as much as I really came out of the Kingsman movie. I think the first Kingsman made my top 10, my first top 10, the year that it came, not my first top 10, but the top 10, the year that it came out. I remember Colin Firth being such a blast in that film. And I remember the church fight, the Warner in the church sequence being, you know, so mind blowing. And I still think Vaughn's a terrific filmmaker. This one I just thought was good, but didn't quite blow me away. Jake, I think you maybe even fall a little bit more on the other side of the line.
Yeah, this movie did not work for me. I kind of felt it was a sort of a cinematic example of, like, you know, two steps forward, one step back. Every time I felt like there was something that I sort of liked, you know, I kind of felt like there were, you know, there'd be a 20-minute stretch where I was like, ah, I don't know how I feel about this. And I think a lot of it comes down to tone, in that, like, I couldn't quite figure out just what kind of movie we were supposed to be watching, or how I was supposed to be feeling about the action and the humor. I mean, I feel like particularly the first Kingsman is just so assured in what type of spy movie it wants to be. It's not It's not James Bond. It's definitely not, you know, the Craig James Bond, but it's nowhere near as, like, slapsticky as, like, an Austin Powers. It sort of finds this really sweet spot somewhere right there in the middle. It sticks the tone within the first 10 minutes, and it sort of, you know, stays the path the entire film. And I felt like with this film, because it's alternating between a couple of different realities, whether it be sort of the literary one or whatever is happening in real life, that those two different parts of the film have two different vibes that kind of bleed into each other. And just because of that, I don't feel like Vaughn did a great job of, like, ever making me feel like this is the type of film that you're watching and this is where you're supposed to be. Because I feel like the spy genre can be so many different things, but it needs to know what it is exactly. You know, if you're you know, watching a Daniel Craig Bond movie and all of a sudden there's an Austin Powers, you know, slapstick joke in there, it's jarring, you know? And so I sort of felt like he never exactly knew what it is that he was making. Therefore, I feel like that translates on screen there, which made me feel like I never knew what it was that I was watching. And all the way through, you know, the ending of the film, I think I was even left going like, wait, what did I just see? And not in an overly dramatic, terrible way, because it's not a bad film, but it's just like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about, like, even the last moment in the movie. Like, is that supposed to be a joke? Is that supposed to be and I think, you know, I will say, you know, speaking of one step forward, two steps back, like, there were some genuine surprises in there, like plot twist where I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. Like, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But all of them felt very reminiscent of other similar versions of that plot twist that I feel like we've seen other people do better. Like, there would be, you know, changes in characters that I thought, oh, I wasn't expecting that. That reminds me of movie X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. It was better in that one, but I didn't expect it here. So even like some of the more complimentary words I can say about the movie still come with sort of the asterisk, where it sort of feels like, yeah, but that was good here, but like it's kind of a ripoff of this movie. And I know we're going to talk about spoilers later, and these are easier things to talk about. With the big joke, I feel like, with all of us at the junket in London, was how difficult of a movie it is to talk about without getting into spoilers.
Yeah, specifically, you know, to certain actors who play specific characters. And exactly. Like, to that end, one person who I really want to, I want to single out Bryce Dallas Howard, and I want to single out Sam Rockwell, because they're almost tasked with the two of them have to balance back and forth between both lines. Mm-hmm. And once you guys see the film, you'll understand how difficult their assignment really is. Rockwell in particular has to be this bridge between the two worlds. And Bryce Dallas Howard does a lot of reacting to it. Kev, where do you put it in terms of your appreciation of Vaughn and how it maybe stacks up to his other films?
I think for me, like, the two words that I think about a lot when I think about this film are ambitious and uneven. Mm-hmm. And I think I admire his ambition, because there are some action scenes in this film that are downright insane. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how he comes up with it. Even in our interview, he said that he would write something down and then I have to somehow film this and make it work somehow. That's to me, when I watched Argyle, I didn't know what I was going to expect. I didn't know it was coming. There's a lot of great twists. And so, I don't know, for me, it was, I had fun with the experience. I don't think it's a great film, but I think it's a good film. I think it has some really solid direction. To me, Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas Howard, as you said, they carry the whole film. Rockwell is remarkable in this, as is Bryce Dallas Howard. And like, I remember when I first saw Confessions of a Dangerous Mind and Matchstick Men, there was something about Rockwell that I just really latched onto as an actor. And I think with this particular film, he is such a reliable character actor. Like, he makes everything entertaining, no matter what the circumstances in this film. He's fun to watch. You know, a couple things that I had a problem with: the PG-13 rating, I think, hurts the movie a bit. And I think
that's a good point.
Vaughn works really heavily in R-rated material: Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Layer Cake. You know, there's something about his violence. Now, I will say the violence in this film almost felt like cotton candy in a way. Like, it was like kind of,
in some points, looks like cotton candy.
Right. And so those scenes were cool. So I get where he's coming from. But the problem is, when you're watching a film like this, even if there's a fantastical element to it, when you're seeing violence done on screen and there's no blood or there's no like repercussions for what just happened, it does take you out. But then you start
cartoonish. It becomes cartoonish almost.
And I think that's probably the point of it. And I think it goes back to Jake's point about tone and whether or not it knew what it wanted to be. I got to tell you, I didn't see any of the twists coming. Yeah. So for me, it was kind of a fun ride. I was just like, oh, what's going to happen? I mean, for people out there who haven't seen the marketing for this, the whole marketing campaign is, who is Agent Argyle? That's the big question. Every trailer ends that way. Every person wants to know. It's a brilliant way to market the film. And I will say the film delivers, I feel, on those twists.
Really?
I do. So that's
what I want to say for the spoiler conversation, because that is one of my biggest complaints, is the resolution to that question.
Do you guys want to just transition into that?
Why don't we do that? Why don't we throw up the spoiler wall now at this point? And for the remainder of the review, we're going to get into specifics for Argyle. So if you're just going into it cold and you want to just understand where we're coming from, Kevin thought it was ambitious but kind of uneven. Jake was a little bit disappointed. I fall right between the two of them. I did have fun with it, but I have issues with how it all sort of played out. We're going to get into now the idea of the answer of who is Agent Argyle. And for people who have made it this far into the thing, there's a book that exists called Argyle, and it's a spy thriller. And this movie is essentially following the author of that book, and she's played by Bryce Dallas Howard. And we see her at book signings, and there are readers who are asking her questions about the characters. And she essentially says, you know, that these characters just kind of came to her, and she's been writing these adventures down. And her parents, played by Catherine O'Hara and Bryan Cranston, are incredibly supportive. Surprise, surprise. The big reveal is that Bryce Dallas Howard was a former spy, and she's writing from her memories. She's Agent Argyle, essentially?
Yeah, because it's like Rachel, isn't it like Rachel Kyle or something like that? And so when you put R Kyle together, it sounds like Argyle.
Yes. And Catherine O'Hara and Bryan Cranston have been encouraging her to write these stories because they want the information that she's been protected
protecting in her head, in her memories, coming up with an idea of a fake accident kind of that has led to her amnesia. I'm with Kevin. I didn't see that coming whatsoever.
But there's a difference between I didn't see it coming and I'm happy with the answer. I'm both.
I liked it.
That's one of my least favorite things about the movie is the resolution to that question.
It's funny. I actually liked it because at the end of the day, the build up to that moment, you were expecting some massive celebrity or something to show up.
And I thought it was the cat.
It was going to be something ridiculous.
That would have been terrible.
I think it's a really smart concept that an agent lost her memory and she was roped into writing these stories I think it's a really cool idea, to be honest with you.
And you know what's even,
what's
even funnier is if you go back to the beginning of the movie and Bryce Dallas Howard has turned in her latest draft and asked her mom to read it.
Right.
And the mom is saying to her, like, hey, your ending's not there. You know,
it's a cop
like,
out.
You can't leave them on a cliffhanger sort of thing. You should keep writing. And then once you realize that she wants her to keep writing to get to the details that she gets to, like even that all kind of makes sense. So I appreciated that.
But I just feel like, I mean, the whole spy with amnesia thing we've seen before. So the entire marketing hook and the twist of this movie is a plot point that we've seen. That's like saying we've seen
John Wick a million times. The first John Wick movie is nothing more than a revenge film, like Charles Bronson Death Wish or something like that. I mean,
But if you watch The Beekeeper and say, oh, this guy gets angry because the guy killed his bees, and someone says, oh yeah, but that's John Wick. To me, that's a totally fair comparison.
What The Beekeeper is about? He gets mad because someone kills the bees.
The point I'm making is that no plot is going to be free of classic.
I'm not saying it's not, but when you tell me that the entire like hook of this movie is the answer to a question, and the answer to the question is a tired cliche that we've seen before, that's when I had a college professor that say that all movies boil down to like either mythology, like biblical tales or something else. I figure what the third one was. So all movies are in some form or fashion, like, you know, like Dune. We're all flying out for Dune tomorrow. You know, it's the Messiah story. Like it's a story that we've seen before. But, you know, when this idea that like this big, we're heading toward this huge revelation. And again, there's also a degree of like, you can't also blame Matthew Vaughn too much on that. He has no control over how they market his movie. He has no control over the fact that they have marketed the movie on the answer to this question. Maybe he didn't intend it to be as big of a question.
He said he didn't.
So you can't knock him for that. But I genuinely think, and again, in the same way that we say Rotten Tomatoes isn't, you know, the barometer of a movie, nor should people's response on social media be. That being said, I do think there's going to be a massive backlash on social media this weekend whenever people find out what the answer to that question is.
I have less of a problem with people figuring out the answer to that question as I do to this imbalance of tone. Like the imbalance of tone is the thing that ultimately dooms this movie, because now that we're talking openly about spoilers, those action set pieces towards the back half of it are wildly entertaining. They're a lot of fun, but they belong in that Kingsman universe that's exaggerated and it doesn't fit with a lot of stuff that happens in the beginning of the movie.
Like the skating on the oil to me.
Awesome.
I just thought that was so the CGI doesn't help it, but I just like to me, like
I thought that looked good.
Oh, but like so like if we compare that to like the church shootout in Kingsman, that scene has at least 1 foot in reality. Like it's an exaggerated version of reality, not indifferent from like a Tarantino Django shootout. To me, the big shootout scene in Argyle and the skating sequence over the oil that we're talking about, to me, those are like almost borderline, for lack of a better word, cartoonish. Which again, I just had a problem with that.
Do you know what? I don't know if we're still fighting our way out of the COVID CGI pipeline backup, where things just don't look. I think things are looking better than they did a year ago.
The beginning of this movie looks really bad. That car chase. Yes. I mean that.
And that, that shot's in the trailer.
But there's, I think there's still elements of a lot of movies where if they just had more time to bake the effects or to refine them a little bit, these things would look better. But I'm not, and I wonder if we're ever going to pull out of it, to be honest with you. I wonder if we're just stuck there.
This is a bigger question to which maybe there's not actually an answer, but like, how has Hollywood not figured out how to use a green screen? Like, it just, like, there are just so many insert shots, and we complained about this when Dial of Destiny came out. In that chase sequence, like, I think you could put an average moviegoer in front of an action scene and say, listen, there are four shots in this action sequence I'm about to show you that are green screen. Tell me what they are. And I think I know that we have an eye for these sort of things because it's what we do for a living. I think the average viewer can pick it out. And if the average viewer can pick it out, there's just some horrible, awful green screen shots.
Is it budget,
though?
Is it budget? Is it not wanting to spend the money do it properly?
This movie cost $200 million, allegedly. So
it's a lot of money.
And you know, it was independent. It's an independent film.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's done by Mars.
It's the best thing that this movie has going for it is that we haven't had a new movie. I mean, we've had the same number one and number two at the box office for 3 weeks. Like, the best thing this movie has going is that there's just nothing else. Like, this is like the easiest path to number one at the box office I've seen in a long time. Like, it's,
Do you think Matthew Vaughn has an audience that draws people out? Do people come to a Matthew Vaughn movie?
I don't know. No.
Interesting.
I think Vaughn has a niche fan base.
Okay. I mean,
Guy Ritchie is like, obviously above him in terms of name recognition,
yes.
But I think I don't know. I mean, when you're putting that in a trailer from the twisted mind of Matthew Vaughn, there's enough. Mm-hmm. I think there's enough people who know his name. I don't think it's like my mom and dad don't know who. There's not general audiences. They don't know who Matthew Vaughn is. They know who Guy Ritchie is. They know who Christopher Nolan is. They know Tarantino. He's not that level, but
they
think
know Vaughn's titles. That's Vaughn, why. Like, yeah, Vaughn. If you put Kick-Ass, Kingsman, things like that. You know,
but are those movies that like okay is Kingsman, yes, but like I feel like for every Kingsman, like I'm not sure Kick-Ass is. I mean, Kick-Ass didn't do particularly great at the box. I'm not sure Kick-Ass is going to get. Yeah, it's pretty old. Yeah, and
first Kingsman 2 cost $30 million and it made 96.
Yeah, Kingsman 2 didn't like leave people with a good taste in their mouth, and I don't think there was a massive audience for the Kingsman. So we're talking about a franchise that like. You know, sure, we all love the first one, but it's not like it's this behemoth franchise that's bringing people. I don't think. And you know, while we're in spoilers, that post credit. Okay, here's the thing: we all saw the screening in a room full of people who I think are fairly well educated movie people, and I like to think that we sort of can follow things. There is this, I don't want to call it half-assed attempt, but this sort of shoehorned attempt at trying to fit Argyle into the same universe as Kingsman, which when the post-credit scene ended, you had a room full of movie professionals going, wait, what? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's not good. Right. Right. Yeah. No, I know. Well, and he goes on to say in our interview, you'll learn more about that Argyle character in the next movie, but you can't bank on that.
No, you cannot. You can't save stuff for a movie that we don't know is, unless you're Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
You can't save stuff for a movie that you don't know is going to happen.
And apparently it's a character that's set up in a book that none of us have read yet. So it's a lot of pre-work. That being said, if he makes another Argyle movie, I'll be there to watch it. But I will be curious to see if this is the start of a franchise or if it is something else entirely. All right, let's kind of take a quick break. And on the other side of that, we're going to play a very fun game.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back. We're going to blow the dust off of a very fun game that we used to play on the premium, and we're bringing it over into the main show. I love this one.
We are playing
the IMDb game.
It's the IMDb game.
We played this with Tarantino one time at his house.
Oh, that's right. At his home.
Yes,
Our lives are weird.
Our lives are very weird. Gabe, would you explain the rules of the IMDb game to the people who are listening?
It's the IMDb game.
you're likely not a old premium subscriber, and maybe you haven't seen this game. This game, we did not invent. We stole from, if you ever listened to the show, Douglas Movies.
Borrowed,
of course. I say stole for fun, which he stole from another radio show, I believe, as well. So it's just a fun game going around.
What's the show?
Doug Loves Movies. If you haven't listened to Doug Loves Movies, very good. Sean, former guest?
I was a guest on that show one time. Nice. Yes, that was very fun. He's very a good guy.
It is a good show. It's a good show. So thank you, Doug Loves Movies, for this fun game that when we have time for, we like to play because it's competitive and it's good fun. The way that it works, I have a series of IMDb pages pulled up. I will reveal the filmmaker, actor to these three gentlemen, and they will have to try to guess the top four most known four projects listed on their IMDb page, and they will get points accordingly. It's been a while. I think I gave a bonus point if you get all four.
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, so you get a point for winning the round, and then you get a bonus point if you get all four, I think is how I score this. It's a little rusty. But yeah, we can go ahead and get started.
And let's, if you're listening this to this for the very first time, it is never game. The titles you think that it is.
Never.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole premise of the game.
That's what makes it fun.
It's just, it's never the things that, in fact, okay, so here's, this is a little test. Randomly, we had a rainy Saturday in Chicago this past weekend, and my girlfriend said what was one of the coolest things she's ever said to me, which is, hey, do you want to watch Anaconda? Which the answer to that question is always yes.
Yes.
And she was trying to figure out who John Voight was. And I was like, oh my God, he's been in like 10,000 different movies. Let me pull him up on IMDb. And it was like Midnight Cowboy, Deer Hunter, one other classic, and then Anaconda. And I was like, I'm really surprised that Anaconda is in his top four. Like they're really. And then I explained the IMDb game to her, and she didn't care. But
Ice Cube classic,
dude.
Ice
I
Cube
love that. Classic. I legitimately love Anaconda.
Me too, dude. That movie's terrifying.
But I get shit on this show for things that I like.
Well,
and
no,
don't
because
like.
you don't like Mad Max. So like your opinion is just not valid.
Fury Road specifically. Fury Road. Let's not lump the whole franchise.
Sean loves Anacondas.
Now, before we run out of time for a competitive game, let's go ahead and get started.
Let's go.
This week, we're keeping it in theme. We're doing an Argyle themed.
A lot of good names.
IMDb game. Right. And we're going to kick things off with the man of the hour, Matthew Vaughn.
Ooh,
so I'll give you gentlemen a moment to write down a few options. You're looking for the top four most known for from the writer, director, producer extraordinaire, Matthew Vaughn.
I'm getting spicy early.
Getting spicy early. A long career. It really goes back.
While we're coming up, you know, a plot twist that people might not expect if you haven't heard this game is that oftentimes it's not even someone's credit for which they're most known. You know, a lot of times it's, you know, it might be, for example, I don't think this is the case, but like it might be Spielberg, but the four movies may be four movies that he produced.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So it can get very complicated.
And
in that
sometimes
way.
I think even television sometimes.
Yeah,
if it's an actor who TV crosses over the
exactly
line.
Like Cranston will be tough because they're a bunch of different directions. Ooh, you can go with them.
True.
All right, Cranston all locked in.
Yep.
You locked
yep
in with your form. All right.
Locked
I'm gonna start out, and of course the answers are now locked in. It's all gentleman's game here. I assume that you are not gonna rewrite your answers. Obviously, Sean, you're gonna kick us off. What are your four?
The kid. My four are X-Men First Class, Kick-Ass, Rocket Man, and Kingsman, the first one.
And let's do Kevin next.
I'm also doing Kick-Ass. I wrote down Starburst, but I meant Stardust. Kingsman, the first one, Secret Service, and then First Class, X-Men.
And Jakey?
I went Kingsman 1, Kingsman 2,
ooh,
X-Men, and Kick-Ass. And of course, X-Men First Class. Like, just
come on, Starburst.
It's an exciting first round because you all got three correct.
So
no points are awarded. His top four most known for, according to IMDb, are Kingsman, The Secret Service, which is the first one.
Yes.
X-Men First Class.
Yeah. Okay.
Kick-Ass, mm-hmm, and Layer Cake.
Ah! Oh,
damn it.
I should have gone with Layer Cake because
I thought about Layer Cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a big one. That's an important one. It really kicked off.
But so often, like, you know, to the point of this game, the important ones aren't on there.
Right.
And if there's nothing better than Kevin getting spicy.
Up next, we have Henry Cavill. Ooh. For the top four most known for, according to IMDb.
Oh, no.
For Henry Cavill. Okay. Which, right. In his own right, has become Mr. Franchise in a lot of ways.
He really has. Yes.
Should I go spicy? I think I might go spicy on this one.
I hope Black Adam is one of them.
Oh, I'm going real spicy on this one.
All right, Jake, you locked in?
I'm locked in. I'm ready to go, baby.
Kev, you locked in?
I'm locked in.
Sean is trying to think of what were those superhero movies he was in. I can't remember the name of play?
Them. I remember he was super at it.
What character did he play? Kev, go ahead and start us off. Not that it matters, but go ahead and start us off this time. What are your four most known for?
I'm going to go with Immortals.
Ooh.
That's my spicy pick.
Wow.
Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, good one.
Damn it. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
BVS.
Interesting.
And just for the clarification, I'm sure Man of Steel is in there somewhere, but it's all right. Jake, continue.
Your top four for Mr. Henry Cavill?
I think Kevin had some good ones. I'm going Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, The Witcher, and Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Spicy.
Okay.
Sean, you're rounding us out.
I have Man of Steel and BVS. I went Enola Holmes.
Ooh.
Love Enola Holmes.
And so Man from U.N.C.L.E. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
He said Garfunkel.
Gentlemen, you were coming back into the game with a fury. You each got two correct.
Come on.
Points awarded yet again. It is 0-0-0. His top four, most known for, according to the Internet Movie Database, are Man of Steel.
Gotta be.
BVS.
Okay.
Mission Impossible Fallout.
Wait, then Kev got three.
No, Kevin didn't get Man of Steel.
He didn't get Man of Steel. Did U.N.C.L.E.
And the theatrical release of Justice League.
If I just said Justice League.
Oh, yeah. I would have probably given you either of them.
No, I would have made you clarify. That's
funny.
I would have made you clarify.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay, none of us clarified on Batman versus Superman.
We all said BVS. I mean,
BVS is BVS. I mean, there was a director's cut on... Yeah, it's different. Yeah. That,
you mean like Ultimate Edition?
Well, Justice League was a full release.
I'll put it this way, Jake.
Yeah.
There's two IMDb entries for Justice League and Zack Snyder's Justice League. There's one BVS.
Yeah, there it is. That's the rule. Yeah, okay.
That makes all sense.
Right. Jake, if you need to know the difference between the two Justice Leagues, I have a book I can recommend to you. It's called Release the Snyder Cut.
No need. I'm on the Blu-ray.
Ooh.
We can do this with Spider-Man too if you want to.
No, that's okay. Thank you very much.
Wait till you see the new special edition of Die Hard coming out.
Hey! IMDb.
We have time for a few more rounds.
We have to. Someone has to win.
I know we have zero, but this might be the lowest scoring game ever. Just for the folks who are hearing this for the first time.
Challenge accepted.
Up next, we have Bryce Dallas Howard. Ooh. Bryce Dallas Howard. We're looking for her top four most known for
projects.
A lot
of options here.
Yeah, a lot.
Bryce
a lot
Dallas
of work. Has acted for a long time. Is a director in her own right these days.
Oh, wow. True.
I might get a little spicy.
A little spicy?
I might get a little spicy on this one, too.
A little spicy?
You can. It's easy.
I feel like this is the kind of person where you could either get 0 out of 4 or you could get 4 out of 4, both very easily.
Well, she's got a lot of massive projects that she's a part of. Films, classics in different genres.
Yeah.
She's got a lot. She's got a lot. 43, she has 43 acting credits, current acting credits. A couple upcoming.
All right.
She told me an amazing story about while we're finishing this out, about watching Apollo 13 with her father. I guess it was like an anniversary release.
And that was the moment that Kevin realized that Ron Howard was her father.
Right. Well, she's sitting next to Ron Howard.
He's wide eyed. He's like, wait, what?
Well, no, that's what happened. Ron Howard, like it was like 20 years after the film came out or something like that. And he was sitting next to her and he didn't even watch the movie. He just turned around and watched every person's face reaction to the film. And I was like, that just reminds me of like the childlike wonder that Ron Howard encompasses.
I love Ron Howard.
What a happy day.
Yeah. Hey.
Jake.
Hey.
Jake, kick us off. What are your top four most known for?
I went with Jurassic World.
Which
the
one?
The first one? Jurassic World.
One.
I didn't say Jurassic World Dominion.
The Zack Snyder's Jurassic World?
Yeah, Zack Snyder's, yeah. Jurassic World, The Help, The Village, and Black Mirror.
The Village is a good one. The Village is a good one.
The Help's a good one.
Sean, what are your top four for Bryce Dallas Howard?
The Help. I did Jurassic World Dominion. I did Spider-Man 3.
Ooh.
And I did The Mandalorian.
Ooh, Sean getting spicy.
Yes.
And Kevin
watches all go over 4.
I hope I'm not botching this. She's in The Village.
She is.
So I went The Village.
He's Zero Dark 30.
This is the wrong person completely.
Chastain, all Chastain movies.
I went The Village, Lady in the Water.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Mandalorian, and the first Jurassic World.
Full Shyamalan.
Okay.
I think
The Help's going to be on there.
Her top four, according to IMDb, are Black Mirror.
Yes!
Okay.
Jurassic World Dominion.
Yes!
No! Again!
The Help.
Yes!
Yes!
And The Mandalorian.
Hey! No! The kid gets 3!
Sean takes a point with 3 correct. Sean's on the board.
Wow.
God, man, I was really proud of my Black Mirror pick.
That's a terrific episode.
Just about to say, that is one of my favorite episodes of Black Mirror. A show that I think, like, not to knock Netflix, but I do think has taken a dip since Netflix has taken it over. That is one of their best episodes.
Our next actor on IMDb is Sam Rockwell.
Ooh, that's tough.
Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
Now,
this is the toughest one.
Is there
so
a
far.
Pick? Is there a pick that's not spicy for Sam Rockwell? He's a bit of a character actor, you know.
He's all over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah, I love him in that one with the Coolio song. I'm joking. What? Dangerous Minds. Remember, Coolio did a song for the movie Dangerous Minds, and then he's in a movie called Confessions of a Dangerous Minds. Yeah. Anyway, let's continue.
That is a deep pull.
That was like an Inception joke.
I needed an IMDb page just to get that one.
Just to get that joke.
Follow the trail.
Wow, this is, you can go anywhere.
I'm looking at my four and thinking I could go 0-4, or I could get all 4 of these right.
I feel good about mine, which means I'm probably going to miss all 4. Yeah.
Any spicy picks, Kev?
A few.
If it's going to help your confidence at all. This gentleman has 109 acting credits.
Yeah, jeez.
Perfect. That makes it way better.
Yeah. While you're waiting, this is kind of interesting that Dylan O'Brien and Corey Michael Smith are going to play Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase in a movie about SNL's first season.
That 1975 movie is really shaping up to be interesting.
Yeah, I think it could be very interesting.
Who's directing it? It's someone big, isn't it?
But isn't the kid from Fablemans playing Lorne Michaels?
Is he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The kid who played young Spielberg.
I may or may not be getting on Friday on Groundhog Day. And you guys know what I mean when I say may or may not be getting Bill Murray.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they calling it Saturday Night Live to tape? Thank you. That's an old joke. Talk about old jokes. Live to tape, kids. Look it up. Is everyone locked in with their Sam Rockwell picks?
Yes.
Sean, you kick us off. What are your top four most known for projects?
I don't feel good about these at all. I went with Moon.
Okay.
Ooh, good one.
3 Billboards, Iron Man 2, and Matchstick Men.
I think I didn't have Moon. Moon's a good one.
Kev?
Okay, so I have a question. If I already wrote my 4 down, but I had the number. I had Iron Man 3 versus Iron Man 2. Do I need to admit that and then change it to 2?
You can just tell me his Iron Man movie is fine. I mean, okay. Well, for you guys, are you okay with
I'll
that?
I'll allow it. I'm okay with allowing
okay.
it.
Okay.
Sure, I lost because I put Zack Snyder's Justice League, but well, sure.
This is a different situation. I wrote Iron Man 3, so if you guys are cool, if not, I can just, we just I'm take fine it. With it. Okay.
I don't care enough. It's just for fun.
So Iron Man 2. There you go. All right. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Iron Man 2, Matchstick Men, and Billboards.
Jakey.
Gabe, I forgot
up
to tell you, when I wrote Jurassic World for Bryce Dallas Howard, I really meant Jurassic World Dominion.
Yeah.
Not that I meant it. I just had it mixed up. That's why I admitted it.
What a tool.
My four are three billboards, Vice, The Green Mile, and Matchstick Men.
Oh, The Green Mile. Forgot he's in that.
Yeah.
His top four, according to IMDb, for Sam Rockwell, are Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Ooh, good. Wow. Well done, Kev.
Seven Psychopaths.
Oh, I love Seven Psychopaths.
Three Billboards.
All right, nice.
And Moon.
Oh.
Kevin and Sean tie with two each.
And then my Iron Man didn't matter anyways.
Yeah. Okay, so Kevin and Sean will get a point, but Jake is left with a goose egg.
When I wrote Vice, I meant Moon.
Well enough.
It's not the same thing.
Just fucking it's just not.
Well, here's the thing, Jake. I knew that neither of those mattered.
Gabe was like, yeah, I don't give
a
shit.
In retrospect, you did play very loosey-goosey with that.
Yeah.
There was no Iron Man on the list.
That was so, kind of telling.
So let us know from now on if we ask Gabe a question and he doesn't give a shit, it's because it doesn't matter.
Score update. Sean is in the lead with 2 points. Kevin is right behind with one. And Jake is bringing up the rear with a goose egg.
That's been said about me a lot.
There we go.
Also, see Matchstick Men if you haven't.
Oh, my God, yes.
Terrific.
Underrated Ridley Scott.
Also, a really good movie about OCD.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you guys ready for a fun one?
Yes.
One that I don't think we've ever played before.
What?
Well, this actor was in TV for a while, so I think we maybe just while we were doing stuff, we just never came across it. I think this is the first time we're playing Catherine O'Hara.
Ooh.
Oh,
Catherine
wow
O'Hara.
Oh, my. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't even know if I can get four.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, you can.
115 credits across.
Oh, I got
gosh,
it.
Gosh, how many decades? Let's see. What is her first credit? Her first credit is in 1975.
Wow.
Catherine O'Hara, absolute legend.
Wow.
Nine years before she screamed Kevin.
Don't give it away.
Everyone knows that.
Well, that wasn't. No, you say 9 years?
Yeah, because what year did that first HA come out?
Wasn't that 90?
Oh, no, that was 90. Yeah. So it was 15 years. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. It looks like Jake and Kevin are locked in. Sean, are you locked in?
I'm locked in.
I think I'm starting with, not that it matters because you're already locked in, but Kevin, I think you're up.
All right. I went Home Alone 1. Home Alone 2, Schitt's Creek, and Frankenweenie.
Okay.
Frankenweenie.
Jakey.
Spicy.
I went very similar, but not 100%. I went Home Alone, Home Alone 2, Schitt's Creek, and Beetlejuice.
Okay. And Sean?
Home Alone, Schitt's Creek, Beetlejuice, and Best in Show.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay.
Wounds.
That's a good call.
I think it's going to be some Christopher Guest movie, yeah, but I don't know which
that's
one.
That's a good call.
Our top four, according to IMDb.
I always forget Christopher Guest is married to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Do you know his favorite Disney song?
No.
Be our Christopher Guest.
That's his favorite Alan Menken song. Yeah. It's really, really good.
All right. Her top four are Penelope.
No.
Of course.
Come on.
Of course. How did I not remember that?
Frankenweenie.
No.
There's no way.
That was more of a joke.
Just no the way. I want you to rewind to the moment where you hear Sean go, Frankenweenie.
Catherine O'Hara. She's a Frankenweenie.
She's great in Frankenweenie. She's really good in it.
All right, we also have Best in Show.
Hey.
Oh, wow.
and A Mighty Wind.
Oh, Jesus. Oh my God, it's a crazy one.
No Home Alone.
No Home Alone.
Wow, no Beetlejuice? No Schitt's Creek.
No Schitt's Creek.
No Schitt's Creek.
But Frank and Weenie.
But Frank and Weenie. So Kevin and Sean tie yet again, each gaining a point, and Jake is just happy to be here.
Hey, story of my life.
It's Creek. I can't believe that.
Let's. I think we have time for one more, and then if it's close enough, we might do a second just to if we need to break a tie.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and try.
Be our Christopher Guest. That's great.
Thank you.
Let's go with
really good.
The top four, most known for Bryan Cranston.
Okay.
Bryan Cranston.
Watch them not have Breaking Bad on there.
Tricky.
Wow.
Tricky,
yeah,
tricky.
Tough.
166 credits, gentlemen.
I'm gonna go kind of spicy.
Okay. A little spicy?
Yeah.
I'm curious,
curious
what a spicy Cranston pick is.
Spicy Cranston sounds like a food item. You know,
if you open up a restaurant.
Spicy Cranston. It comes with like blue candy around the rim of the plate. Yeah.
I think their signature dish is the danger.
Yeah, they serve it in the hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of a bowl, you get soup in the Heisenberg hat. Yeah.
It's called breaking bread. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Breaking bread. Oh God. Where's Vince Gilligan when we need him?
You can have that one. I just want 10%.
Oh, so
when you sit down at your table, they hand you Malcolm in the menu.
Oh God.
If you don't have time to sit down, you have to take the food to Argo.
Okay. Jake, you are up. What are your top four for Bryan Cranston? Do you believe?
Speaking of, I'm going Argo, Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle, and Trumbo.
Okay. And Sean?
Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle, Argo, and Godzilla.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Interesting.
Kevin.
Because I went Godzilla, Malcolm in the Middle, Trumbo, Breaking Bad.
Oh, ooh. All right.
Okay. I think we have a similar list, but there's one off on each one, yeah. I think.
It's just Argyle four times.
Why him is on there.
It's Argoal Yule.
Stretch. Bryan Cranston's top four, according to IMDb, are Malcolm in the Middle.
Bass.
Breaking Bad.
Bang.
Argo.
Bang.
Oh, wow.
And from behind, we have Trumbo to give
Jake.
Clean sweep. 2 points. A bonus point.
And the extra point.
So we got to do another round. We got to be quick because Kevin has a hard out. He's got to go be on live TV.
Perfect.
A quick score update. Sean has 3 points. Jake and Kevin have 2.
Oh, wow.
John is barely holding on to the lead here.
Right,
if Kevin or Jake double their points here and Sean whiffs.
Let's go.
A huge upset.
Sean could be the Lions of this game.
Yeah. Go for it on 4th and 2 instead of kicking that field goal, Sean. That's really great.
We're going to round out with John Cena.
Oh, all right.
John Cena.
Beautiful.
Talk about a Mr. Franchise. I don't think he's ever not been in a franchise.
Pronounced Senna.
Senna, like the driver. Is he gonna star in the F1 documentary or something? Or F1 biopic?
Yes. Oh boy, let's see. What do you choose?
Why am I blinking?
Because you can't see him.
Hey. Wow, we're just on a roll here.
This is for all the marbles, guys.
Oh my gosh, why am I blanking?
Jake, who's locked in? Anybody locked
in? I'm locked
in.
I need to think of one more.
Kevin is one shy.
I'm torn. All right, I'm gonna put this one down.
Sean is locked in,
and it's gonna cost me. I think it's gonna cost me.
Yeah, I took a bit of a gamble on one of
mine. Are we all in? We all in?
Okay, can I ask a quick question before we reveal this? And if this is not possible, I don't know.
Can I look at IMDb?
No. Okay, if he's part of the WWE, is WWE count as a credit?
It is on IMDb. That is how I will tell you that they are listed on IMDb.
Like WrestleMania or something like that.
They have, like, SmackDown is like a TV series.
So I'd have to choose the specific one.
Yes, you can't just say WWE.
Thank you.
Yes, okay, yes, yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Thank you for letting me clarify. Okay.
We will not give you that one.
He's a wrestler.
I just put movies.
Wrestling.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Sean, you are kicking us off. Top four, most known for.
All right.
John Cena.
Bumblebee. Peacemaker. F9.
Mm.
And the Marine.
Ooh, I forgot about F9.
Kevin, your top four.
Very similar to Sean's. Bumblebee, Fast 9, Suicide Squad, the James Gunn one, Peacemaker, TV show.
And Jakey.
Peacemaker, Suicide Squad, Bumblebee, and I put WrestleMania.
Okay. His top four.
The one I was going to put is Blockers. If Blockers is there, I'm going to be pissed.
We have F9, the Fast Saga. We have Bumblebee.
Yes.
We have 12 rounds.
Oof.
Yeah. Or you played Danny Fisher. You guys don't remember the movie?
That's the name of it. I thought you were going to say like 12 rounds of like...
I remember 12 rounds.
Like a wrestling thing.
And then finally...
Oh boy.
We have the Suicide Squad.
Oh, all right.
Now, gentlemen, we're in a predicament, Kev. The score is now Sean 3, Kevin 3, Jake 2. Can I squeeze in a quick tiebreaker between Sean and Kevin?
I have 6 minutes, so let's go. Let's do
perfect.
It. Yeah, let's do it.
Perfect.
Quick.
It's gonna be an easy one. We've played this gentleman, I think, 36 times in this game because he always comes up and he's a legend.
Let's do it.
Do I not play?
You can play if you want just to see what you score, but I'll just get it from them.
If he gets two points, he catches up.
If I get 2 points.
If you get... That's true. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. That's fair.
Sam Jackson.
Okay. Sam Jackson. Now we talk about Mr. and Mrs. Franchise. Gentlemen, as an actor, this man has 214 credits.
That's it?
214 credits. 120 of them are Nick Fury.
I'm going to go spicy. I'm going real spicy.
Real spicy. Hey man, never hurts to go spicy in a tiebreaker round.
In a round where Frankenweenie was one of the deciding votes.
That's true. Dance with the one that brought you, they say. Stay spicy.
It's true.
All right, Kevin is locked in.
Yep.
Jake is locked in. Sean? Yes.
Oh, not yet. Hold on.
He's scrambling. He's had the lead the whole time, and now he's feeling the pressure.
These are not correct, but go ahead.
Okay, Kevin, I think you start us off this round.
Pulp Fiction, Hateful Eight, Captain Marvel, Die Hard 3.
Nice.
Okay. Jakey?
Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Avengers 1, Attack of the Clones.
Okay. And Sean?
Pulp Fiction, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Shaft, and Jurassic Park.
Ooh.
Okay.
All great ones.
His top four most known for, according to IMDb.
He's going
to
be so frustrating.
Pulp Fiction.
There we go.
The Hateful Eight.
Oh, wow, good job, Kev.
Snakes on a Plane.
Yes.
Good.
And confirming our winner for today, breaking the tie, is Captain Marvel.
Yes!
Wow.
Kevin got three right.
Well done.
Crushed.
Yeah. Final score.
You know what it is? It's the Interstellar in my jacket that helped me today, baby.
It's a movie, isn't it, Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel, that one.
The final score, and then I'll give it to you, Sean, to sign us off. Kevin wins with 4 points. Sean with 3.
Like the first time I've ever won.
But I'll say, you know, man of the match, Jake with the only clean sweep and his only 2 points.
It's true.
Hey, well,
that was a good one. Done.
I don't play well, but when I do,
it was flashy.
I play very well.
It was flashy. You know, you caught the one-handed catch, and they said, it looks good, but he should have had two hands.
He should have had two hands on it.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, Sean. All you right. Take us away.
For the call to action this week, guys, head to the comments under the YouTube channel and let us know your favorite Matthew Vaughn movie. If you'd like to wait until after you see Argyle, go to Argyle and then come back and let us know if that one ranks at the top of your list. We'll be back next week with a full on episode. We are, as one of the guys mentioned earlier, heading out to Dune, but Dune interviews will wait for a little bit. And so we'll tell you guys how all that goes when we're able to. So in the meantime, follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach, and the show is at Real Blend. I still have not figured out something good to say. I guess we can say
Dunes.
Still
got Dunes.
Yeah, Dunes. Tunes until Dunes. It happens. But Tunes.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.